Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here. It's Thursday, November 10th, 2016. And this week we're going to take a different end of the stick. Now, what on earth am I talking about? Different end of the stick? I mean, there are only two ends to the stick, Joel.
Well, you had a 50% shot of getting it right.
Actually, the stick I'm referring to is an Abraham Hicks stick. That's an analogy, a metaphor that they use to explain how to stay focused on attracting what you want and not attracting what you don't want. The stick is again, it's a metaphor. It's an imaginary stick. One end of the stick is whatever it is you're trying to attract. The other end of the stick is not the opposite of what you're trying to attract. It's the lack of it, which I guess is actually the true opposite when you think about it, Joel.
Right, right.
And as a result, we end up thinking, well, because we don't truly understand the stick metaphor, most people, we think that, well, if I want to attract war, then I don't think about peace. And that there's some truth to that. But what we really want to do is say, if I want to attract war, and I don't know why anyone would want to attract war, but let's assume somebody did want to attract war. If I want to attract war, I have to think of the lack of war. And that's weird. Let's put it more positively. Let's say I want to attract a mate. Well, that means I have to think about a lack of a mate in order to not attract it.
I'm with you.
And that actually makes more sense now that I phrase it that way.
Right. Well, and a lot of it is there's some things that make sense too, and there's other things that doesn't. But it all makes sense. But when you're saying it, and I'll put it in my phraseology, the lack. You know, when you're focused on what you're lacking, you're inviting more lack. That I make lack. Lack to me is a noun in a sense. It's just like instead of wealth, I have a lack. And so when you're constantly worried about that lack, you don't realize you're inviting the lack. That's the key thing.
Yeah, that's the key thing right there. I have to tell you, Joel, my goal in life is to be lack intolerant.
Yes. Yes, I like it. I mean, I like where you're going with that.
Because if I'm lack intolerant, then I won't react to lack anymore. And that's really the best thing of all.
Well, everything is built on showing the lack side of thing, the lack of security in our world, the lack of what's happening. That the politicians talk about it, the news talks about it. Everything's about the lack of, you're in danger. I read the other day that a week or so ago there was a elevated terrorist alert, and that for Virginia, New York, and Texas, if I remember correctly. Well, there's always a terrorist alert, but it's just the idea that you're constantly scanning the horizon for something. It keeps you in an elevated state, which keeps bringing all this stuff that you don't want to you. Horrible thing.
And one of the funny things is, it's amazing how easily we can buy into the idea that, yeah, we don't want to think about lack, but we have a hard time. And we can even imagine what lack is like. That's where I was going with it. But we have a harder time imagining having thing.
Well, yes.
I don't know why that is. I mean, it's so much easier, but I still don't get it.
Well, here's an example that worked, and I'll use one for me. There'll be a month where, and this is historically, it hasn't been a long time this has happened to me, but this is some of the situations I'd get into. I'd have a really good month business-wise. I would have all my bills paid and have a reasonable amount of money saved up or something. Then that unexpected, you have your property tax due for your cars or whatever they call that, and you didn't anticipate that, you forgot about that, or that's one little, the one little thing that your mortgage is going to go up because the appraisal on your house went up, so the taxes. So you get that weird, not expected bill. Well, my first reaction is, wow, this was a great month, and all of a sudden I'm hit with this bill. So you start envisioning, oh, wow, you know, I can never get ahead. And it, you just are automatically in what I've changed my way of thinking when one of those pop up. Wow, I am just in such a great place that I can pay that now.
Which
I don't
is
have
excellent.
To worry about it. And that changes the dynamic. But when you I've often spoke of my ongoing battles with Comcast, and we are, you know, great friends, frenemies, as I like to call it, me and Comcast. But I
have to admit, I've never heard that before. But Comcast is one of my best friends.
I got a bill the other day from Comcast for like $375. It's just a ridiculous number, and it was $141. Before, my initial reaction is, oh my gosh, I mean, I can't afford that. You know that's $4,000 a year for cable, blah 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 blah, and internet. And then of course I'm adding to the dread of having to be on the phone with Comcast for 2 hours and have, you know, four people tell you they don't know what's wrong, only to disconnect you when the one person who would know could get on the line. All that stuff you start anticipating. So you're inviting that whole experience into your life. Mm. So the lack of, wow, that's money I'm going to have to pay, and that won't be money that I have. And you're looking at it from that other perspective. So that those are things for me that I use examples of, like, versus I'm in a great position that even if I had to, first of all, I'm not going to have to pay the $375. It is going to take me an hour on the phone, but I'm not going to have to pay the $375.
Which clearly itself is great news. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So let's start with that. But in a worst case scenario, in an absolute worst case scenario, if I had to pay the $375, would my life be drastically altered? In my situation, no, it would not be. And I try to live that way and understanding that. But there was a time when I could allow that to get me in a downward spiral of lack, where I start focusing on all potentially of what I, you know, if everything happened, then boy, I don't have the money to pay this, or you know, when you mail your mortgage payment in and you're trying to anticipate, and these are years ago type things, but okay, I have a direct deposit happening this day, so I want to mail my mortgage payment in, and then I have enough money to cover it, but I don't like to see my balance dip below a certain amount. And all these things that we're set up wise, you know, how we conditioned ourselves to almost anticipate the negative or anticipate the lack, we live in a fear of the lack.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
I almost say that we start with that with every client that I deal with. What is your fear of lack? And at first they don't understand, but always they will be able to, the lack of a relationship, the lack of a job, the lack of money, the lack of the feeling of security, the lack of intimacy. All these things are underlying caught. Lack is the thing behind it all, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's very much the thing behind it, or the lack of the thing behind it.
Right.
And when you look at it, you realize that the whole lack thing, the whole attraction to lack, if you will, the whole default pattern of lack, I think that's where I'm trying to go with it, is just that. It's a habitual pattern. So obviously the goal is to replace that pattern with a pattern of focusing on thing, on stuff, on events, on the stuff that is actual and real rather than the lack of stuff. And
right.
that's where we work on our affirmations, and we work on, you know, little exercises to during the day to remind ourselves that things are good, and finding, you know, doing the pivot to find the good side of a situation that initially seems bad, and all that kind of stuff. And the more that we do that, it actually works. I mean, I can certainly look at my own life over the last few months even and just see how much improvement I've made just by deliberately taking time throughout the day to focus on the good stuff. I can even point to, here's a good story, Joel. This has been an interesting week from the perspective of thing versus lack. Starting on Monday, I woke up on Monday determined to do something I had not really been doing very well, and that was doing daily affirmations. And as it turned out, I really didn't do very well this week, but I did well on Monday. Monday, I woke up, and first thing, made it my priority, sit down, do my affirmations. So I did. I had this little routine I do. It took about 5 minutes. Just focused on my affirmations, and a lot of my affirmations are about abundance, so it was pretty firmly fixed in my mind. That morning, we got a couple phone calls. Now, I should have prefaced this with another bit of a story, which is that my wife, who has a gardening business during the gardening season, which of course is now winding up, and I help her with that a fair amount. She and I are launching a winter business to carry her over throughout the winter, which we are calling Clutter Busters. And the gist of it is that we go into people's homes and help clear up their clutter and organize things and all that kind of stuff. Well, by the way, that's not a unique name. It may sound like it's something we invented, but there are actually a couple other Clutterbuster outfits around the country. It's nowhere near anywhere we are. There's actually one near you, Joel. There's one in Virginia. But we're the only Clutterbusters around here, so we're doing that one. And so we got a couple calls about the new Clutterbusters business, which was great because we've been, you know, we've been doing advertising, we've been trying to figure out how to reach out to existing customers and all this other stuff, trying to get new business, because it can be a little challenging to get a new business going. So two calls in the morning, that was pretty good. Next day, Tuesday, wake up, I forgot to do the affirmations, because the first thing that happened as I got out of bed and came into the other room that's our office, I got immediately hit with problems, emergencies, so to speak. And so I was dealing with those emergencies, and before I knew it, I was into the day and completely forgot about doing my affirmations. And by the way, there were no phone calls that morning from the potential new customers. So I said, oh, geez, I didn't do it right. Wednesday morning, okay, tomorrow morning, Wednesday, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to do it. Well, best laid plans, I still didn't do it. I woke up, didn't do the affirmations, and sure enough, there were no phone calls that morning. Okay, Thursday, I am definitely going to do it. Okay, woke up Thursday morning and did it. Got my affirmations in. And you know what? There was a phone call immediately after. I mean, like within seconds after I was done with my affirmations, a phone call came in, another Clutterbusters customer for us. And then Friday, same deal. And I remembered to do it again. And guess what? There was another phone call. I mean, it was a perfect pattern the entire week. If I did the affirmations, the phone calls came in. If I didn't do them, they didn't come in. But the best part of all, you know how I do a daily walk. Well, Thursday, I went out to do my walk. And as I went out, actually, before I go out, I usually check the weather just to see, you know, what's on the radar. I really don't want to walk in the rain if I can avoid it, or the snow or whatever. And I checked the radar, and there was nothing. I mean, it was just clear. Walked outside, huge black clouds all over the place. And I'm thinking, wow, no rain and all those black clouds? Okay, well, I'll go anyway. It's saying there's not going to be a rain. I'll trust there's not going to be any rain. But I start, I start my walk and I'm thinking, you know, I don't really like walking under black clouds. And I know that I have successfully influenced weather before. I'd really like to get rid of these black clouds. So I thought about the analogy of thing versus lack. I said, well, I don't want to be thinking in terms of lack of black clouds, because that'll just keep black clouds around. So I've got to do what I normally do whenever I successfully help transition the weather. I got to think about blue skies and, you know, sunny days and, you know, maybe a little puffy whiffs of cloud, and that's about it. Warm temperatures, all that kind of stuff. So that's what I did. And I'm focusing and focusing and focusing. I'm walking along the path, and every once in a while I glance up. Sky hasn't changed a bit. I mean, not even a little bit. But I keep walking, I keep walking. Now, I walk about a 4-mile walk. I get to the 2-mile point, and I turn around. And you know what I see, Joel? I see an entire blue sky.
Yeah.
Like the whole sky behind me had changed as I was walking. I don't know how to convey to you how weird that was, because literally up until the last moment before I turned around, I was still looking up and seeing cloud, a really dark, nasty cloud. And as I turned around, everything on the other side was blue. And I don't mean just like blue with a lot of cloud. I mean just blue. There were no clouds at all.
Right.
Very strange. But very cool.
Well, and that's, you know, where we start, when you start learning, and the hardest part of people not attracting what they're lacking is that internal dialogue, that thought process. What is missing? You, when you're walking, you learned, you understood what you needed to focus on, not like, I don't want these black clouds here. That's not
right.
That's not what's
that's works. Counterproductive.
Yeah, versus I remember, and I'm pretty confident it was Mother Teresa. This was in the Abraham Hicks, one of their readings that I did. She a long time ago mentioned that during the Vietnam War, she wanted to go. They were having a anti-war rally.
Right.
And they asked her why she hadn't participated in any to that point and why she wouldn't go to that one. She said, I don't go to anti-war rallies. I have a peace rally and I'll go there.
Right, because she understood the difference.
Yes, she clearly knew that anti-war isn't, you know, it's the government has had a war on drugs. It helped create more addicts. They've had a war on poverty. It's helped create more poverty. You're looking at it from the opposite side. And that's where that analogy you started with Abraham, grab the other side of the stick. What is that? The other side of the stick is where you're at. What are you really trying to attract? What are you really trying to do? And understanding we go back to the, I said this last week, what you worry about is you literally, when you worry, are creating what you're inviting what you don't want. You're praying for what you don't want when you worry. And that's what you're always bringing to the table. You're putting that out there. I'm worried about finances. I'm worried about my health. I'm worried about these type things. What you're bringing to the table.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, we're both libertarian in our philosophies. Libertarians, especially in the Libertarian Party and who are politically active libertarians, make this mistake over and over and over again. You mentioned the war on drugs, war on poverty. You ask a libertarian, your typical libertarian, what his stance is on that, and he'll tell you that he's anti-war on drugs, anti-war on poverty, anti-war on terror, anti-war on everything. And I'm sure, Joel, you and I are practically the only libertarians in the world who understand that that's going to perpetuate all those things.
Absolutely. And it's the piece of understanding that what you're really trying to seek, and not to get into a political discussion here, but the understanding that what a Libertarian Party is really seeking is more empowerment to the citizens. That's what we're really after. We're letting grown people make grown people decisions. That's what we're really focusing on. We don't need a government to tell us what to do. But when you declare war on, or you say we're anti this, or it has the opposite effect. When you're anti something, it doesn't matter. It's one of the things that I work with, especially in people in relationships that are having a hard time letting go, and you know, that for some reason I end up with a lot of clients who have a really difficult time moving on from relationships. And one of the things that it dawned on me, and I don't claim responsibility for this statement, but I heard it sometime, I'm sure a long time ago. Everybody assumes, because you're taught, you know, if I ask you, you know, Walt, what is the opposite of love? And you're conditioned to say hate.
Yeah. Oh, sure. That's the standard answer.
Yeah, exactly. The truth is, love and hate are the exact same emotion. It's just how it's directed, what's attached to it. The opposite of love or hate is indifference, is not caring. That's the opposite. And you know, we get stuck on, you know, I love or hate this person. Well, love or hate are both very strong emotions. It's just how they're directed. What is it, a positive feeling or a negative feeling? That's a very strong emotion. They're not the opposite. Whereas indifference is just not caring about that other side.
In other words, not emoting about it, not experiencing
exactly.
Emotion.
Exactly. When you truly know you're over, I look back over, we could go on for hours about some of my crazy relationships over the years, but I won't. But I look back at some relationships I've lost over the years, how incredibly intense the loss was at the time and how it occupied my thought all the time.
Oh, isn't that amazing how that happens?
Yeah, and all these years later, the same thing that occupied all my time never, ever crosses my mind today. Is I'm indifferent to it. So that is the opposite of love or hate. It is being indifferent. It has an indifference. And I know that you know, I've had people that have questioned my grieving process when I lost my son TJ, and the idea for me was we're told the intense grieving process is about focusing on the loss of the person and letting go of all that. Well, I have no intention of letting go of the memory of my son, and that's not exactly what they're saying. I get. I just choose to focus on the joy that he brought and continues to bring to my life. That's my grieving process.
What they actually say is actually contradictory, because you touched on it right there, which is that you're supposed to focus on the loss and then you focus on letting go of it. And they don't seem to realize that those are two opposite ends. They're not the same thing.
Right. There is, you know, the loss of my son created a void in my life if I allow it to be a void. Or the joy that he brought to my life is very fulfilling. He still brings joy to my life every day. I also understand people going, you mean you don't miss your son? Of course I miss my – of course. Well, you know, that's clearly where it's at. It's where my focus lies in the process of grieving. And that's understanding it isn't about – I'm not dishonoring him. That, you know, I can imagine, and again, knowing my son, he probably is looking down going, just shut up. Just, yeah. I don't care.
he wouldn't let you get away with that at all.
Yeah, he would be like, oh, I don't have time for this. And that's something that I hear a lot of people. It's almost like they're afraid that if they just change that somehow it would be viewed as disrespecting or letting go or losing the focus of their kid. But the truth is, you know, I truly feel his presence with me. I there's not a day that goes by that I don't laugh at something that him and I did or talked about over time. It's very joyous to me. And his death is not joyous, but his life is joyous. Yeah. And again, it's where I focus. It's what I bring.
Right, right. The thing that I notice about the people who tend to be critical, the ones who say you're not being respectful to the lost loved one and so forth, they are the ones who are the most likely to have forgotten what it was they loved about their loved ones and do not keep in the forefront of their minds what it was they loved about their own loved ones. So they figure everybody else should be doing the same thing.
Right, right. And I'll tell you something, too. I've heard this on multiple occasions from various people, that I haven't been able to get over the loss of my son. Or child, and it's certainly, and I'm not being critical. I'm telling everyone my view. I'm not critical of anyone else's view or how they choose to do it. Well, I have no intention of quote unquote getting over the loss of my son. It's just a part of me now. It's not it's not something that you can get over. Again, from my perspective, and so instead of allowing get to be a driver in my life, I just accept it. I have a really a hero of mine is a person no one's ever heard of. He was a war veteran and he lost his lower leg, left leg in war. And he came home and, you know, I'd known him before. We'd worked out in the gym together. You know, I knew he was home, and I heard he lost his lower leg. And I was going to go by to visit, so I called him and said, "Are you home?" And he goes, "Are you picking me up for the gym?" And I go, "Yeah, that's what I'm calling." I didn't intend that. I said, "Yeah, that's what I'm calling." And so we go, and he has this prosthetic leg on. Him and I never ever discussed the leg. To this day, that's been 3 years. We never have discussed his leg.
Wow.
It's just, it's like I got to really, you know, obviously, you know, he'd say stuff like, "I really got to condition my right leg now, obviously, to make up for that." And he's a beast in the gym. He doesn't miss workouts. The point is, clearly, his leg's missing. I never have heard him once focus on the lack of a leg. I look at this incredibly fit man, very, very successful business wise now. He just never stopped and looked at the lack of things. He just looked at the abundance of what he had, and that's what he kept inviting.
I give him a ton of credit. I'm not sure I could do it as well as he's doing it. And I mean, kudos to him. That's fantastic to be able to just put that into that kind of perspective. Because as you pointed out, I mean, even with the loss of your son, you still currently miss him. But as you also told us about 10 minutes ago, an old love that really hurt at the time, it's not even there anymore. And eventually that will happen. It'll just be, with DJ, it'll just be all the stuff you loved about him. That's the only thing that'll be in your mind.
Right. And that's what comes up. When I think about him, I don't think of his death. I think about the silly stuff he brought. I mean, you know, to walk into your son's room one day and find in his aquarium captured a copperhead snake and put it in his aquarium. And I'm like, "Son, it's a copperhead." He goes, "But it's nice." And I'm like, "No, it's not. It's a copperhead. We got to." And he was not happy that I made him let the snake go. It just, he just wanted a pet snake. And I go, well, we'll get something that won't kill you. And he goes, oh, no, he's very nice. He won't bite me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious to me that he really believed that. And he probably applied the law of treasure because the snake never bit him. I mean, it's just
probably
crazy.
Yeah.
So it, but within the context of all of this stuff is, you know, you opened with the opposite side of the stick, the other side of the stick. The way of doing it is so difficult for people to comprehend because it seems like if you sit there and go, I don't want to get sick. I am not sick. If you keep using the word sick, the mind isn't filtering out the don't want to. It's the sick that it's picking up on. In any room, or if you're driving, we've done this a few times, but one of the absolute first things I do with anyone is when I have a client in my office, I ask them to, I go through this little ritual and say, okay, I'm going to ask you not to do something. And then I ask them to not look for the color red. Well, I got several red things in my office and stuff they didn't notice before. All of a sudden they're focusing on all the red stuff.
Right.
And you know, and you can do that in your own environment. Another example is, you know, when you buy a new car, you don't realize how many of the exact models of your new car there are out there. It's amazing.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because now you're focused on that car. So it's the same thing, you know, it applies the same way. It's where your focus, where you're going to line up your focus and apply that energy. And you got to let go of the other stuff. And it's so easy. Like you mentioned the word let go. It sounds so incredibly easy. But letting go is really changing what you're looking at. It's reversing what you're looking at most of the time.
It's changing what we're looking at, and it's also reversing our attitude about what we look at. And deciding not to be held hostage to default behaviors that have worked against us in the past. And that is the hard part right there, because it's hard to believe that if you just change your perspective, if I just change my perspective and stop looking at stuff negatively and start looking at it positively, that the negative stuff will fall away. That's very hard to believe for us because we're so used to the opposite. And I know that now, and it's still hard. That's the part that gets me. If I know that now, how could it still be hard? But somehow it seems to be.
It's hard because that is the way we have taught. We've been taught our entire life. These are the things we have analogies for it. Even, you know, the Murphy's Law. You know, wait for the other shoe to.
Yeah.
I mean, these are conditioned responses that we have. You know, well, I'm going to wait for the other shoe to drop. Well, what does that mean?
You know, it means dread that something else is going to happen, and therefore it's bound to happen.
Right. Or the idea that, okay, something good happened, so let me find some wood to knock on.
Yeah, right.
And that will assure that because something good happened, there's not going to be a rebound of something bad.
Well, wouldn't that be interesting if we actually applied the same rules to good things that happened?
It would be great. I mean, if we could just say, wow, you know, and have a little ritual like great things happen, more things are happening. Let me acknowledge that. I'm looking forward to that next best thing. You know, I'm waiting for that next great thing to happen.
I mean, we both know personally from our own experiences just how good things can get when you do exactly that. When you start saying, oh, wow, knock on wood, I want that to happen again.
Yes, and that's where we derive our everything from. When you really the basis of all of this and the law of attraction. Every week we talk about it, and every week we're trying to give examples of our own personal struggles or people that we know and how we're helping other people. And the reason is it's not as simple as just I want to be positive thinking and everything's going to work out great. That's a factor. But how we're positive thinking, and sometimes we don't necessarily realize our positive thinking isn't very positive at all anyway. And the part that most people that I talk to have a really hard time comprehending when I explain negative thinking and neutral thinking are both bad. And that concept is very difficult. So I try not to get too deep in that subject.
Oh, it took me a long time to learn that one. I mean, even when I faced the issue and asked myself, well, is neutral really neutral? It took me a long time to even figure out what the answer was. It's not evident. It's not immediately obvious.
I use the best thing that I heard one of the teachers I've been to describe. Neutral is just inviting more of the status quo. You're neutral. You're not attracting anything. It's more status quo.
Yeah, it's default mode.
It's default mode.
It's where you're just kind of waiting to see what happens next.
Right. Whereas where is this, you know, the abundance that I have in my life will remain as long as I believe the abundance is in my life. If I look at every time I have to write a check or every time a bill comes in or any of that stuff happens and I start to worry about the lack, then that will create a cascade or a spiraling effect of, wow, you know, that gets close. Money starts to go, you know, starts to go fast at that point. Mm. You're like, oh my gosh, I had a belief for a long time that when you, and this is very controversial, especially for money manager people or the people that talk about how to live with your budget and people that live that way, it is, you know, things get tight and then you start believing things are tight, so you stop spending money, you stop doing, then that creates more of that environment, and it is a very difficult line to explain how, you know, if you're not working, it doesn't make any sense. Let's don't go increase your spending. That's logical. However, don't focus so much on like my money is leaving me because I have no more money coming in, because that's exactly what you're going to be creating. There is a new opportunity around the corner. There will be money around the corner. There is the idea that I have an abundance and will continue to have abundance. There is money. The check may not have been deposited in my mind yet, but it is there. And that's where everybody gets tripped up. It's a very complicated thing. And I know that I've had some discussion with some quote unquote money gurus that say, you know, what you're espousing is dangerous to people. And I try to explain that I'm not espousing just simply giving away money. I am saying that when you live with a view of a lack, you're going to have more lack, period.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? There's a difference between giving away money and releasing it.
Yes, yes.
Huge difference. And if I were talking to one of the money gurus, that's what I would focus on. I would say to them, I would ask them, what do you think the difference is between releasing money and giving money away?
Yeah.
And I bet you I'd get some quizzical looks on their faces, because if you don't understand this philosophy, that's a tough question to answer.
Right. And that's where it gets, you know, that, and that's where people, you start to get into different perspectives and, you know, is it best, you know, I know Dave Ramsey, I believe is his name, that does a lot of financial talk, and he has some really solid ideas. But one of the things that I always wished he would include is sort of an understanding of the law of attraction as well. The idea that, you know, you're not going to buy something to make you happy, which is a law of attraction type understanding. Having an abundance isn't about buying something to make you happy. Having an abundance is about security and safety and you know, the idea that a thing isn't going to make you happy. Happiness is first, and the abundance comes with happiness. And I think his stuff would do a lot better if he would just sort of incorporate some of that, because what he's talking about is not anti-law of attraction, but it can be used in the anti-law of attraction side when you just become so focused, when money becomes the point of your life, that and all of that happens, it's an obsession. It's hard to keep money when you're worried about that being the most important thing in your life.
Right, and that's precisely what I've been working on releasing in my own life. Releasing that obsession, I think that's a good word, an obsession with what's going to happen with the money. Where's the money right. going to come from? What's going to happen next? You know, I don't see anything on the horizon. You know, all the little mental negative games that we play with ourselves, thinking that, well, that's the responsible thing to do. No, it's not. I can say from experience,
no,
it is definitely not the responsible thing to do. The responsible thing to do is to find a way to let go of that. Now, that's the hard part,
right,
but that's the goal. The goal is release that stuff. Just, oh, God. And, you know, there's another aspect of this, Joel. As you were talking about it, it occurred to me, there's an entertainment side of this. We as human beings are trained from the beginning of school age, and actually even before that, to be entertained. What's the most common method that a parent will use with a young child? They'll entertain them in order to distract them from what they're crying about, or, you know, whatever it is that their current immediate problem is or whatever. They entertain them. And then you go to school. They want you to learn stuff the way they want you to learn it. So what do? They entertain you. And then they want you to watch the news so they can sell you advertising. What do? They entertain you. The entertainment is the default behavior that everyone wants us to fall into. The problem is that when you're being entertained, you're not creating anything. You're watching other people do the creating. And as a result,
right,
when we run into, say, a money problem, now all of a sudden, well, okay, where's the entertainment going to come from?
Right, right. It just is. It's so backwards in our thinking that, and it's so conditioned that the to me, I've made the statement, the greatest disability that I've ever seen anybody have is being on disability.
Yes.
And the initial reaction from people is, well, you're cruel, you're this, you're that, and, you know, and I always have a disclaimer. By no means am I talking about severely handicapped people or people in really bad states. That I'm glad that's there for them. I'm happy that they have, you know, I want that there. That's not what I'm talking about.
By the way, those people, if you ask them, their top goal in life is to get off disability.
Those are the people, yeah. But I've actually sat down with a lady who, she's a registered nurse, licensed, everything's fine. She fell and she hurt her back and she couldn't work for a couple years. And she was on disability, which is, you know, a good backup for people in that situation. So she was very depressed. Life was not, she had some addiction issues going on around gambling. And so we were talking and I said, one of the things I do is you have way too much time on your hands. And I said, you need to, in my mind, why don't you go back to work? And her first response was, I will lose my disability.
Mm.
And my response was like, oh, thank God.
Yes.
And her
response, not the reaction she was expecting at all.
She's like, well, no, what? I mean, she almost like was panting with, and I said, she said, well, I'll lose my health insurance. I'll lose my income. I go, well, your income is as a nurse, you can make in one, and probably in 3 days, what you make in an entire month on disability. And you may have a month or two without insurance, or we can figure that out. I'm sure, and turns out the long-term solution was the government had a very good program, a back-to-work program, which allows a person at the time 6 months of working and maintaining their insurance before they have to go off disability.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah.
by the time her other insurance kicked in on her job, she was able to get off disability. So it ended up working out. But the fear, the disability was a trap to her.
Right.
And you know, the idea that I can't get a job because I'll lose my disability is such backward thinking, but it is why so many people are on the disability rolls.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that is probably the number one reason why they remain there. Because it isn't that they're bad people, and it isn't that their great desire in life is to be dependent. It's that they get into that trap, and once they're in that trap, they can't see the way out. And when they can't see the way out of a trap, all these horrible negative things happen psychologically. When you can't see a way out of a trap, when you believe that you are permanently trapped, you are literally falling into the pattern of telling your body, time to die. That's really what it adds up to. I'm not saying that you're going to die. I'm just saying that that's the signal you're sending to all the cells in your body. And if you let it go long enough, that's what the end result will be. And it doesn't have to be that way.
But again, I one of the things I was at a mall today, and I was picking up a couple of items, and they had a news crew, And as you know, I've been on a news blackout now for several months and really enjoying it. I'm walking by and a lady with a microphone asked me, just would I be interested in being interviewed for TV? And I said, no, thank you. And I just walked on. But I was observing the people she was talking to. But there were like four or five people, and they were of all ages. The topic was health. The idea that the three people that were just the most, and she did a really good job with it, but these were three senior citizens that I was listening to when he was talking. He's like, oh, it's the, and I'm by no means defending Obamacare, please. I'm not into the federal government stuff at all, as you know, but I'm just talking about this one particular case. All three of these people are on Social Security. All three of these people are not affected by Obamacare in any form or fashion. It has no effect on them. But yet they were going on and on about the increases and how it's and she said, how has Obamacare affected you at all personally? And none of them had an answer. Now, the idea that and there'll be people saying, oh, he's just defending Obamacare. I'm clearly not. I'm just saying, when we get worried or focused or stuff that's, first of all, out of our venue, out of our control, why spend that energy on stuff that in no way affects anybody? I don't get it. That was just a great example of just let's randomly, you know, I don't have enough things to worry about. I have it, you know, which I have nothing to worry about, but let's create things that don't affect me to worry about. You know, it's sort of what our society does. It's a focus on worry. It's a lack. It's an underlying, a bigger picture here is an underlying trend to the, let's look at the lack in all of our lives, yes. The lack of everything.
Yep. That's exactly what it is.
Yes. And that's where it comes. Our kids are taught a lack of stuff. You know, the idea that we must teach from a lack perspective, a fear perspective. And that's such a dangerous goal of, you know, the quantum thinking and you know, critical thinking type patterns are no longer discussed or taught anywhere, and you're not seeing those ways of thinking that bring about the law of attraction stuff. So the battle comes not from the people's willingness to do it, but what they're being sold constantly, and like you said, they're being entertained into it, so to speak. They're being entertained into the distraction, and the entertainment, quote unquote, is what's leading this underlying cause.
It's interesting also that most people do not understand how counterproductive entertainment is in that sense. I mean, I'm not saying that entertainment is all bad. It's not. I mean, sometimes you just need a way to distract yourself from, you know, the cares of the day. Well, going to watch some entertainment, that's a good thing. That's a way of just relaxing and getting rid of it. But entertainment as a default way of living, that's a different thing entirely. And yet that's precisely what we're taught to do. That's what happens in school. It's one of the great ironies, Joel. People get very, very wrapped up about school, particularly parents, and quite understandably so. And they're so interested in making sure that there's a curriculum and that the curriculum is teacher-led and that the teacher is a good entertainer and that the teacher will stimulate the child to learn. Think about that phrase for a bit. Stimulate the child to learn. And that if you have a good teacher stimulating your child to learn, your child will have the best chance of getting into college, getting a degree, and having a successful life. What they don't seem to understand is that entertainment is a default position. It is not an active position. It's a watching and observing position. And yes. If you want somebody to learn something, you can't let them stay in a default state. There's no way to do it. You can't learn by doing nothing. You have to learn by doing stuff, by doing things. And until you're doing the things, you're not actively learning. The most that you're doing is observing. And if you're lucky, you may be able to internalize some of that. If you're particularly good at visualizing what you would have been doing if you weren't being entertained. And that's why some kids come through it okay. But a lot of them don't. A lot of them end up getting left behind, to borrow the current popular phrase, the child who's left behind. Well, the child that's being left behind is being left behind because he's being directed. He's being directed right. To be entertained by this and entertained by that. And guess what? That doesn't work.
Well, and you know, the place for law of attraction, if it were be put put into the proper perspective in school or work or wherever. You know, I have hundreds of examples. You know, we've talked a lot about all this. You know, 45 minutes of our talking today has been about how it's easy to get caught on the other side. But let's look at the right side, the positive side.
Yeah, we're kind of overdue. We're usually quicker than that. This time we're not. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Let's go there.
Yeah. So I look at it when I choose to hear examples in my life, when I choose to start, when I made that big choice, that leap, let me just live in this. Let me remind myself of the great stuff I have, the abundance I have, and I don't have the lack any longer. When I remove that term and those thoughts from my mind, and then it's almost like it instantaneously changed because I wasn't feeling the lack anymore. I have gone several years. I've never been in danger of not paying a bill or not paying my electric bill or any of that stuff. For years, I had trouble with all that. I don't worry about it anymore. So I'm not coming close anymore. Mm. So I'm excited that I don't have that fear. I no longer live in a fear of what life has to bring me. I'm able to deal with it. I'm able to move on. So all that life has thrown at me, pretty much everything that life can throw at somebody. And I've handled it 100% of the time. Doesn't mean I did it and didn't get bruised and battered along the way, but I've done it and feel good about that. So the likelihood that I'll be able to continue that is pretty good. When you have 100% success rate of getting through stuff you didn't think you'd get through, odds are we'll continue that same success rate. And this is what leads us to today. All this, the abundance, the excitement that I feel. One of our topics one day was excitement. Is it contagious?
Right.
Using entertainment. I love one of your analogies. When you're down, you'll watch comedies, and that really lifts you up. That's humor and laughter is one of your great places for the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. So entertainment is like everything else. It can be good or bad. We were talking about entertainment sort of in a negative way. Being entertained with a law of attraction purpose behind it, where it does lift your mood, but being able to realize it's lifting your mood. Entertainment can have all directions like everything else. If you're going to be entertained in an uplifting manner. Be entertained in a way to, it's fine to be distracted from your world, but don't be distracted in a negative way. Be distracted in a positive way.
Yeah, I would say if you're going to be entertained, do it deliberately.
Yes.
Everything in life that we do, we should do with deliberation. And by deliberation, I mean intent, not a lot of thinking and pre-thinking and worrying. I mean taking an intent position and then acting.
Right. And that's where it goes. When you change your view, I've seen many people and I'm so excited to witness people firsthand change the way they're thinking, the way they're entertained, or deliberately use their thoughts to create the world that they want to. We're not a victim of all this stuff. We can be a victim.
Well,
of
we
it
set
all.
Ourselves
choosing
up to be
not
victims.
To. We're,
yeah, I mean, we it's right. Not that we could. We do. Most of us do. Most of the time, make
right.
ourselves a victim of it.
Right.
But we don't have to be.
Right. We don't have to be, because you are incomplete. The greatest power we have is we are in control of our perspective. We're in control of that immediate situation. And just like your great analogy of you walking down the street, you turned around, there's huge blue open sky behind you. You got to choose to look back at that open blue sky, or you could have chosen to continue to look forward at that dark gray sky.
And it's a shock. It's a shock the first time that happens. Because, I mean, literally, Joel, I was seeing black cloud the entire first half of the walk.
Right.
And I was working really hard, like mad, focusing on blue sky, yellow, blue sky, sun, no clouds, blue sky. But to actually see the result that dramatically, whoa, that was like a whack in the face. But it was a nice one.
Right. And, you know, a few weeks ago I have, I see clients and you know, I have – various forms clients could pay me for my services. Most of my younger, 18, 19, 20, 25 year old kids, most of the time their parents are paying. And so to avoid them having to bring a check every time, I have an electronic billing. And you know, I've never had anybody really take advantage of me. I'm not going to pursue anybody. I'm not going to chase people down for money. If you don't, you know, if I get to, you know, get a couple of sessions that haven't been paid, I won't see the person anymore until it's caught up. But I don't get into a big shouting match over somebody owing me money. Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that one day I was looking at my accounts, and I'm like, boy, I didn't put a lot of money in the bank this week. And well, I had like four or five people that have gotten a couple of sets backed up. So, you know, you get some, you know, I don't know, somebody owing you $300, you get five of those people owing you $300. All of a sudden you're noticing that.
Yeah.
And so what was funny, I was like, huh. I said, okay. I did not give it a second thought. I laughed and said, look, these people have always been great pay. All I did was one, the lady that I always knew pay, and she said, oh my goodness, that slipped my mind. She immediately paid it online. Mm-hmm. Within 4 minutes of that, three of the other people paid.
4 minutes? Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, and hello, I'm laughing. I'm saying, okay, I gave it a little kick, and then all that, it just came in. Everybody got caught up, and boom. It's I've had those days where I laugh because you're waiting on a check or you're waiting on something and it doesn't come. You get a little frustrated. Then the next day, all the checks come or something comes early. And those are the days that I need to remind myself, the spiral direction goes either way. Living in the upward spiral, living in that positive upward uplifting thing is such a great way to live. It's exciting.
It is. But it can be nerve wracking when you're first learning it. But it is exciting. No, nevertheless, no matter what part of the progressive spectrum you're on, whether you're in the early stages or the late stages or the middle stages, it's still exciting when it happens. And,
right.
And of course, the goal is to make it happen all the time. And the way you make that happen all the time is by keeping your perspective where you want it to be, which sounds so easy.
Well, last Tuesday, I had a young lady came in. Her mom was... had paid for her to come in, and she was reluctant. She didn't really want to be there. She had basically dropped out of VCU. It's a local university here, of Virginia Commonwealth University.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to be some type of school teacher or school guidance counselor. And so she had all these great plans, and she dropped out, and very negative in her, well, I've ruined my life. You're like 19 and you've ruined your life. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm finding that really difficult. I don't think you have that much power to ruin your life that quickly. And she didn't know how to take that. You know, like, well, what do you mean? I said, so while we were in the office, I said, look, I said, you're speculating. You got some bad grades. You got off track. I said, what we're going to do is we're going to call the guidance counselor or the student advisor at school right now. So I called and we got her on the phone, on the speaker phone, and we started talking, and the lady was very up positive, and I explained, you know, she just ran into a difficult period. She said, oh, we got this wonderful program. You know, we can help. She can either rehabilitate her grades or we can drop those classes. Let's get her back in school. Let's do the, you know, let's get her back in January. She'll start. I got it approved. And all on the phone, we took care of that in like 20 minutes. And she's like, oh, my gosh. She said, I didn't ruin my life. I said, of course you didn't ruin your life. You're 19. You know, you have just assumed that. She left saying, I have a different life than when I walked in the door. And I go, nothing changed but your perspective of your situation.
Yes. Nothing and changed that, but your perspective of your situation. Yeah. That's the magic words right there.
And that's all of us, Walt. That's what we relay every week. Our listeners and you and I both, you have the power of your perspective. And once you conquer that, once you have that ability to master that, better than conquer, when you master that, what the world's yours. What you want is yours. It's an amazing, uplifting fact that I've discovered. It's a lot harder than it sounds sometimes, but it is a fact.
And it applies to everything. I mean, we talked about the stuff that's outside of our control when we were talking about, you know, political issues and so forth. But even if you turn those around, those actually, it turns out, to a degree, we do have within our control within the law of attraction. So, for right. instance, if you're talking about a war on poverty, instead of thinking about a war on poverty or being against a war on poverty, think about a program of prosperity.
Yes.
Now that's truly the different direction from where you're trying, where you thought you were trying to go, instead of a war on drugs, how about a healthy society?
Yes, yes.
Instead of a war on terror, how about just peaceful coexistence?
Peaceful coexistence and not getting caught up in all the dogma and the talk of, you know, the this, that, or the other. You know, it's amazing the internal dialogue that is sold to us, and then we're having, when you find yourself repeating that stuff, that's where it all sort of manifests in good or bad.
And the amazing thing is that even if what we focus on, by focusing on prosperity, by focusing on massive health, on focusing on peaceful coexistence, even if that doesn't change the whole world, it's amazing how fast it changes our own world. Our own immediate world changes when we do that.
You have, wherever you're sitting, whether you're in your car listening on our podcast or you're at home listening on the computer, this is an opportunity at this moment. You don't need to wait 3 weeks for this to happen. Right now, you can change your perspective and change your life. Right now. It's instant when you will understand it. You have, if you're breathing, this technique works. If you're in prison, this technique works. It's what happens in between your ears that dictates your reality. Mm-hmm. And you can adjust your reality to whatever you want it to be. It's like tuning in. It's like a radio station. That's what you're tuning into.
It's exactly what you're tuning into. And the probably the hardest part to believe in is the part that I want to convey right now as being the truth, which is that the results come fast. They really, the positive results of the positive change in thought pattern, they come fast. And they can come so fast that they knock you for a loop. Like, wow, that's got to be a coincidence. Right. That couldn't have happened. But yeah, it did happen. It's going to happen consistently every time that I do that. That's for me, is probably the hardest thing to adjust to emotionally. The idea that if I actually do this, it's actually going to come right back to me in a positive way every time. Wow. That's a lot.
Without exception, without exception. And that's the piece that the fact we know it and can't do it 100% of the time is really the million-dollar baffling question of all time. But instead of being focused on that, the more I want to keep practicing it.
And practice makes perfect. I mean, we all know that one. That one's been around for generations. You know,
yes.
So just keep practicing. And if you make mistakes when practicing, well, guess what? That's what practicing is for. It's for making the mistakes so that you can learn how to do it properly. I mean, why should we even bother to practice if we're not going to expect that we're going to make mistakes when we're practicing? It's not like the person who becomes a concert pianist sat down and played perfectly from day one when he was practicing. No, that's not. It was exactly the opposite. The very first time he sat down to practice, it sounded horrible. Yeah. But he kept trying to work on the little things to make it better. And the little things in this case are redirecting to, okay, I can change my perspective. I can control what I'm focusing on. I can control what I'm going to attract next into my life just by feeling good and thinking about what I want in terms of what I want and not in terms of what I don't want. And that's the whole point of the stick analogy. The whole point of the stick analogy is keep focusing on the positive thing that you want, take it off the lack of a thing, and stuff starts to happen. That's it.
Completely. Without exception. Absolutely. Completely. It's a blessing to have. It's the greatest gift and the greatest power given as human beings. And once we master it, once we understand it, that's how life becomes yours to live. Your choice. You get to live your way.
And what a gift that is. That's a fantastic gift. It's an amazing gift. And it's a gift that we keep giving every week here on the show, which makes it a gift for us too. That's the best part. The more that you give the gift, the more you get it back.
Yeah, and you know, as I mentioned a little while ago, we now are available on iTunes.
Yep, we're on iTunes.
So please download our podcast, and we're getting closer to our ultimate goal of one day having a morning drive time radio station where we could take live calls. I can't wait till that happens.
We're on iTunes. You can also, if you use an Android, you can just subscribe at our website, loatoday.net. We're also on YouTube now. All of our shows from now on are being posted on YouTube, and you can find us in the social media on Facebook and Twitter. So it's been great.